federal government cybersecurity community is going through a transition. Compliance is giving way to continuous monitoring and diagnostics. Pat Schombach has been chief information officer at three federal agencies, ATF, the Transportation Security Administration, and the Secret Service. He is now a principal at Schombach and Williams Consulting and my guest on Industry Chatter today. Pat, it's great to have you on the program. First of all, as I mentioned before we went on the air, you got to find better company to hang around with than Jim Williams.
Thank you, Francis. Great to be on with you.
It's great to have you on the program. I congratulate you on that. One of the things that you'll no doubt be digging into is helping people understand, both on the industry side and the agency side, what is coming next as far as this transition from compliance to continuous monitoring and diagnostics. What's your take on that, having been in that seat at federal agencies for so long?
Yeah, Francis, you're exactly right. That's a huge transition that's occurring. And I have to say, although I slept pretty well at night all the years that I was a CIO, there were times when I did fear of what we didn't know of what was going on from a cybersecurity perspective. And as we have seen now over and over again over the last few years, that the threats are real and they're happening every day. And so I think the right things are beginning to happen to move from trying to block threats after they've happened to do something on a more continuous basis and hopefully get ahead of the threats. But that's a transition that's happening, and there's no easy answers to that question. But that's one of the things Jim and I hope to focus on in helping guide not only the private sector companies, but the government agencies on how to deal with this going forward.
You, obviously, from your background, as I mentioned it earlier, have a specialty in law enforcement, having been at the ATF and the Secret Service. Is thinking in the law enforcement community about cyber different than maybe in a more standard-type civilian operation?
Well, you know, I think that's definitely the case. As I think about if you strategize the federal space, I think the intelligence community has probably had a long jump on this whole topic and has been concerned about the threats and staying ahead of the threats as best they can. I would sort of categorize the law enforcement community as next in line, maybe with the Defense Department and their abilities to defend against these threats. And then the average run-of-the-mill, as you call them, civilian agencies, I would put maybe in that third tier down where they're, in some cases, just waking up to the fact that these things are happening and stronger defenses need to be put in place. So I would definitely tier the government sort of in that perspective. But they're all getting hurt by what's going on from the bad guys and the curious in this market.
Part of the transition here, too, is a transition of what the bad guys want to do. And we talked for a long time about just trying to defend from, denial of service attacks and those kinds of things. And now, even in the civilian agencies where you would think the information data that the agencies hold would be more innocent, more innocuous. It's more of an espionage trend, is what I keep hearing. Do you see that as well? Is that the thing that agencies are trying to think about the most at this point, Pat, or is there something else out there?
Well, I think the threats come from a whole variety of different perspectives. I think, you know, I use the word the curious. There are people that are trying to see what they can do and what they can see and what they can get at. But I think it goes all the way up the spectrum to nation states that are trying to do harm and harm the security of our country. So I think the threats take all kinds of flavors, and that also means that the defenses have to be applied to all those different threat vectors as they're coming out of these agencies.
Are we in a position now of being able to try to better anticipate what the threat vector is going to look like and how it's going to evolve, or are we still in kind of the triage mode that we've been in for a long time?
So that's a great question. That's where the continuous monitoring aspect starts to come into the question, rather than closing the barn door after the horse is already out, which has been the typical approach that many agencies have used. Find a threat, find a solution to it, and then close it up. The continuous monitoring aspect is trying to get more of a real-time handle on what's happening minute by minute. And then we're a little bit far away from it yet, but the idea to be, you know, a defense in depth that allows you to perhaps start to predict what's going to be happening and put defenses in place before the bad things happen to the agencies.
All right. So define that term defense in depth, because it's one that I hear bounced around quite a bit, but I hear it in different contexts in which it could mean different things.
Yeah, that you're right. It's probably a buzzword that's going around a lot these days. But the idea being that there are, because there are many threat vectors, there are also many layers to the security that you need to put in place, and all the way from the barn door after the horse is out to the predictive technologies that we all hope will be in place going forward. It's all of that depth, both horizontally and vertically, the fences, if you will, or defenses that the agencies can put in place.
Now, another term that we hear on an ongoing basis that may be turning into a buzzword or buzz phrase is advanced persistent threat. Is that, does that still, that concept and the actual threat itself still have the potency that it had when we first started to hear about it maybe 2 to 3 years ago?
So advanced persistent, in my terminology, that starts to get at the idea of, can we start to predict what is going to be a threat and a persistent threat and get out in advance of it so that we can put the defenses in place before the bad things happen.
Mm-hmm. That is something that, though, that I imagine people are coming to you and saying, how do we think about this?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what I'm trying to do, what Jim and I hope to do as a partnership, is to help the private sector companies, for the most part, understand what the government challenges are, what the government is really looking for, particularly in the DHS space, which is supposed to have the lead around .gov and .com, and how best to assist the federal government. You know, I kind of look at this as very much a codependency of the government on the private sector and vice versa, where these companies, they need to have the technologies and the capabilities to provide to the government, but they also need to know, how does the government really need to use this? And then also, what information does the private sector have about these threats that are coming at them every day that needs to be shared with the federal government so that the federal government has a bigger picture, broader picture than what they're able to have today?
So let's talk about that codependency for a minute. Pat Schonbach's my guest. Do we have the right people in the right roles in that relationship? Are the people that should be doing agency stuff doing it in the agencies, and the people that should be doing private sector stuff doing it in the private sector? Or do we need to move some stuff from one column to the other, do you think?
Well, you know, that's a good way to look at it. I hadn't really thought of it in that perspective, but I think there are a lot of good people on both sides of the table that are trying to solve these issues. I think it's more a factor of how is this capability going to be sold to the government? How is the government going to buy this capability from what exists in the private sector? I think there's lots of creativity going on, but maybe not at the transaction level to understand, how is this really going to happen on a day-to-day basis? Who's going to provide what capability, what information, and who's going to do something with that, and what does that something look like? Still a lot of questions of how this is going to evolve.
Is it your sense that most of those questions are technical, in that we need to, the agencies are saying we need to find X, Y, or Z capability, or is the issue transactional, where the government's saying this stuff's available to us, but we just need to figure out exactly how the best way is to go out and acquire it?
So it's like so many things in the technology arena. There are technical issues, no doubt about that. But also there are kind of the relationship issues that people need to overcome about who's going to do what to whom and who gets to see what information, and all kinds of legal issues around privacy and what information can be shared and what happens if you get too close to classified information. And there's still lots of those kinds of legal issues. But there are as many or more of those than there are the technical issues, in my opinion.
So you've opened up a couple of other lines of conversation for us. When we come back, Pat, we'll talk about information sharing. We'll talk about the privacy versus security debate with Pat Schonbach of Schonbach Williams Consulting on Industry Chatter today on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Pat Schonbach, a principal in the new firm of Schonbach and Williams Consulting. He's partnering with former GSA and DHS official Jim Williams. to form this organization. Pat threw out a couple of topics on the table before the break, so I want to go to those. Information sharing. We now have, of course, the information sharing environment. Shmendra Paul heads that up. And that has kind of set the tone for the way that information moves around government. And not to get into the specifics of what ISE is responsible for, but overall information sharing, small I and small s, is that as robust as it could be in the federal government in order to prevent cyber attacks and share information as far as what is happening one agency to the next, or is there still room for improvement?
Well, you know, is it as far along as it should be? Absolutely, it is not. But I've seen a lot of progress. I can remember not too many years ago when there was tremendous reluctance for agencies to talk about vulnerabilities and what's going on inside their organization, let alone the conversation that needs to occur between government and the private sector, where the private sector companies, with the protection of their market space, were so unwilling to talk about threats and vulnerabilities that they were experiencing for fear that it would scare the marketplace away from wanting to do business with that company. And yet you look at things like the Target store situation over these past holidays, and little by little you see a tremendous agreement across the private sector that, yes, these vulnerabilities are out there, a lot of attacks occur, a lot of data gets spilled, and yet you have to get out in front of it. You have to talk to your client base about what's happened and share as much of that information as you can. That's on the plus side. Then you have the Snowden and other incidents that really encourage clamping down on any kind of information sharing because of what the government might do with the information that they acquire from the private sector. So it's a, you know, expanding and contracting kind of a situation, unfortunately. But it's going to take a whole lot of transparency, in my opinion, around the whole cybersecurity issue, transparency between agencies and between agencies in the private sector of what's out there, what's happening, what do people see. And I think that's where, again, DHS being in the lead of the .com/.gov situation, trying to have that visibility into what's going on throughout the network, if you will, so that they have a chance to get out in front of these threats and respond accordingly.
You beat me to the Target incident. Talked to a couple of folks since that's happened, and the general consensus seems to be that while it was terrible, and in fact, our debit card was one of the ones that was included there because we bought stuff at Target.
Wow.
It was a bad situation, but overall, it speaks to quite an evolution in response and candor about cybersecurity incidents, because a lot of folks seem to think 5 years ago they would have tried to have brushed it under the rug, where now there doesn't seem to be the stigma around an attack like this. And that's probably a better thing than doing it the way that companies and organizations used to do it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I, if you're like me, I don't do that much online business, but I've had probably half a dozen incidents in the past, let's say, 5 years where I've been notified by a vendor that my information may have been compromised. And they offer all kinds of, you know, credit protection services and other things. But it's been done fairly quietly, as you pointed out. And there was a time when no one even wanted to talk about it. I think it's a great thing that Target is willing to be so forthcoming about it, because the reality is that all organizations are getting attacked. Sometimes spills are a lot more important than other times, but the fact that they're willing to let their clients know and share what they know about the situation, I think it's a positive thing.
And I don't know numbers, but I have an anecdotal piece of evidence. I was in the Target that we shop at the Saturday after it all happened, and they were giving everybody a 10% discount, which I thought was pretty interesting. They did that that whole weekend. But they didn't seem to be hurting for business. There seemed to be plenty of people that were willing to give them credit cards and debit cards, continuing to trust them to whatever level to hold that information just days after this this incident came to light. So it seems from that, at least, I would take away that the stigma among the end user, whether it's a Target customer or a federal agency customer, probably doesn't exist nearly the way that it used to.
Well, I would agree with you there, primarily. It's also an indication of how we've moved away from a cash-based society to a plastic-based society, where people just have found it so much more convenient to carry the plastic around instead of the cash that they're willing to accept that there might be vulnerabilities. But also, again, to your point, I think the confidence that they have in a place like Target to say, hey, we've got issues, we know what's happened, here's what the situation is, here's what we're willing to do about it, and to get out in front of the of what could be really negative publicity.
All right. The other item that we threw out on the table before the break, Pat, was the concept of privacy. And for a long time, the discussion in your community among information and information security experts was that the idea of privacy and the idea of cybersecurity were kind of at odds with each other. That's gone full circle now where the elements seem to kind of be yoked together. And I wonder if you expect that to be the concept moving forward, or if maybe it's a pendulum swing and we'll get back to the middle at some point where maybe they're not linked together and they're not completely at odds with each other, but they do bump up against one another.
You know, I think that argument's going to go back and forth and up and down for gosh knows how long. I think the Snowden incident, again, is an example where there might have been real agreement that you can have privacy with security, but then you have situations like that to say, you know, there's not enough security that you can put in place to guarantee my privacy. I think there are always going to be citizens who feel that way about what the government does with the information they have.
The intelligence community has been sensitive to the insider threat for a long time because of spying, and we know about the traditional sorts of insider threats, the Aldrich Ameses and so on,
sure,
of the world. I wonder if you have some thoughts about why this idea of insider threats has been a little more tough for the intelligence community to crack.
Well, boy, that's a great question. I think because there are so many thousands and tens and hundreds of thousands of people who are involved in intelligence activities legitimately, and all the clearances that people have across government and into the private sector, the realization, I think, that organizations are waking up to, that is, you know, even bad guys were good guys at one time. And, what does it take to turn a good guy into a bad guy? And that can happen at any given time on any given day. So that agencies, I believe, are a lot more aware of the fact that people can be turned. Their attitudes can change. They might get into a situation feeling one way, very positive about what they're doing for the U.S. government or with the U.S. government, and then the next day wake up and say, you know, this isn't right.
We just have a couple of minutes left, Pat, but I wonder, in closing, if you could tell me what are a couple of the things that agencies and companies are coming to you and Jim, especially in the cyber realm or the information security realm, and saying we really need help with fill in the blank.
So I think the biggest thing we're hearing most often is we need help with understanding who's really in charge. Is it the law enforcement community? Is it the Homeland Security community? Is it the Department of Justice? Is it the Department of Defense? Is it the intelligence community? And I think in many ways it's all of the above, but I think particularly DHS, my own personal opinion, needs to take a more basic stand to say, here's what our role in this picture is, and so that the private sector organizations can line up behind that and start putting real solutions into place. I see glimpses of that happening. As you have observed before, a lot of revolving doors and leadership around DHS on this particular topic. But I think that's the question that I hear most is, who's really in charge? What's going to happen? What do they need? When do they need it? And when are these capability is going to really start to be put into place? We've talked about this for a long time now. DHS has existed for 10 years, and I think we're not nearly as far along as we need to be.
Pat, the time always blows by when I have you on the program. It's great to talk to you. I tease Jim all the time, but you have a great partner, and so does he. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks a lot, Francis.